The Dharma, incomparably profound and exquisite, is rarely met with even in hundreds of thousands of millions of kalpas. We now can see it, hear it, accept and hold it. May we realize the true mind of the Tathagata. Today is day two of this 7-day sesshin, our first sesshin at Mountain Gate in the year 2016, a brand new year, and a time to make our practice brand new as well, to not go in the same old place. Kapla Roshi often would say at the beginning of a sesshin, no more business as usual, no more business as usual. Push the boundaries, explore, go beyond where you've gone before. This is important. If we're to truly realize who we are, it has to be done in that way. No holds barred. Just dive. And already on day two, things are settling down. Just keep going. And like I said, push the boundaries. Don't accept a status quo. Explore further. Go beyond. And as you've heard so many times, it has to happen in the realm beyond words. This morning we chanted for Jusen, who is still undergoing this extended surgery, open heart surgery, for repair of a valve, heart valve, and also for some bypass surgery. And this despite the fact that she lived a relatively healthy life. She was actually a physical education teacher and did a lot of exercise, and so she probably staved off what would have killed her 2 decades ago by living a more healthy life. But it's caught up with her, as it does with some people, and today this marathon surgery to hopefully repair her heart, get her going good as new again. At the same time, Seiki, who was resident at Sogenji, died of cancer a couple of days ago. In coming and going, we never leave home. This is what Hakuin writes. How can we understand that? Shiromunan, who was Hakuin's grandfather in Zen, wrote, if you die before you die, you won't die when you die. What did he mean by that? What is this life and death all about, anyway? Many years ago, many, many years ago, I had a dream. A number of you already know this story. It was a resurgence of recurrent nightmares that I had when I was a kid. And this particular dream had to do with suddenly falling off a cliff. And I would always startle awake as I was beginning to fall with a huge amount of fear, terror really, at the anticipation of falling to my death. And it caused me any amount of grief. I was able finally to kind of stuff it underground until I started doing Zazen. And then, as Zen is wont to do, it opened the lid, and unbidden by me, the dream reemerged. And I was rather disgusted by this because we got precious little time to rest when we were at the Rochester Zen Center in the old days under Roshi Philip Kaplow. And I was tired. I didn't like being wakened up in the middle of the night by my nightmares. For that matter, I didn't want to be wakened up any time by nightmares. And I was, as I said, quite disgusted by this. And I just decided, all right, it's just a dream. I'm going to see where it takes me. I'm going to quit copping out and waking up instead of letting the dream take its course. And so the next time I had the nightmare, a few nights later, I allowed myself to stay present in the dream. However, I copped out in a different way. I fainted in the dream. still disgusted, or perhaps more disgusted, I determined even more completely to see it to its full extent. And the next time I had the dream, I let myself fall. I could see these enormous black rocks at the base of the cliff, the edge of the sea. And somewhere in the middle of falling, I realized beyond any measure of doubt that it really didn't matter whether I died, dashed to death on the rocks below, or whether I survived. There is no difference between life and death, except, of course, in appearance. And from then on, the nightmare came no more. It's interesting, if you believe in past lives, how the incomplete karma of a past life can continue into subsequent lives, giving the opportunity to complete it, to work it through. What is death? What is dying? Yamanamuma Roshi, in his last poem, wrote, as for liberating all sentient beings, which of course is the first of the Bodhisattva vows, as for liberating all sentient beings, just this left to do, letting go everything in the entire universe. Letting go everything in the entire universe. As we sit on our cushion or in our chair doing zazen, we practice letting go. And initially it's a struggle. We are so mired in a self-image and so invested in protecting that self-image that it's very difficult to let go, to see a different view. It can feel quite threatening, actually, and we can put up all kinds of walls, all kinds of plausible experiences and excuses to avoid going where we would find liberation. And then as we continue in our practice, we gradually begin to settle into it and relax into it and begin to have some insights. And the insights allow us to let go just a little bit. And inspired by that, we keep going deeper and find ourselves with more insights and letting go a little bit more. And actually sitting down for a set period of time, which we do in the Zendo here and do during Sesshin and do during regular daily practice as well. There's a bell, actually there's four bells at the beginning of the sitting round. And after that, you were not allowed to move until the final ending bell after 25 minutes. There are three exceptions, of course, in Mountain Gate and Hidden Valley Zen Center during the day of Sesshin, and one of them is during the metta practice in the late morning, which goes for an hour without a bell, and then for another hour following that without a bell. And during that time, it's possible to move, change posture if you feel the need to. The second time is during Taisho, although Taishos here are begun to get fairly short, not much more than 25 minutes. And then the third time is during Golden Hour. Yamanamumon Roshi called the hour just before 7 o'clock, from 6 to 7 o'clock in the evening. And of course that depends on the season, but in general, it's a time when the earth begins to settle down. Animals and birds begin to quiet down. Life begins to relax and get ready to go to sleep. And that's a wonderful time to sit. And so we sit for a full hour without any bells in between so that we don't have to be disturbed. But during that time, if you feel the need to move, you're allowed to move. Otherwise, It's just a 25-minute round. No moving. No moving. And that requires a certain amount of letting go, because we're stuck with ourselves. We're stuck with this mind, whatever habit patterns it chooses to play out on us during that time. And so to be able to just give ourselves to the out-breath can balance that, can allow us to let go of the customary workings of our mind, the customary habit patterns of greed, anger, and delusion. And in particular, the customary habit pattern of having a self-image. Because when we have a self-image, we feel compelled to defend it. If it gets bumped into, we feel insulted. If it gets challenged, we feel threatened. Who are we really? As we continue our practice, we begin to let go that self-image because we begin to see through it. And this is vital for our well-being, for our practice, for our ultimate awakening. And again, here a caution, because awakening is a process, and one kensho is not sufficient. And 100 kenshos are not sufficient unless we integrate what we realize through those kenshos into our daily life and allow our behavior to be in accordance with what we've realized through those kenshos. I'd like to share with you now some of the death poems of the masters. There may be one or two of Japanese poets thrown in, but perhaps it will help you be curious and reach beyond the out-breath, extending that out-breath, reach beyond it to see if you can find what is life, what is death, who am I really. So I'm going to share these from a book called Japanese Death Poems, written by Zen monks and haiku poets on the verge of death. It's compiled with an introduction and commentary by Joel Hoffman. And you've already heard the first Shiro Monan, if you die before you die, you won't die when you die. If you die before you die, you won't die when you die. If we let go the places we're caught, our self-image in particular, then when the moment of our physical death arrives, there'll be no felt need to hang on to anything. There'll be just a moving on, a flow with circumstance. And these Zen masters understood that. This is the story of a man who became a monk in Japan. A certain man left his native province to wander from place to place. He was an artist and haiku poet. He could dance, sing, and play stringed instruments, and he used to gladden the hearts of those who came near him. For a number of years, he was part of the company around the table of Ozawa Sahichi, an innkeeper in the Tokaido region. It's the very famous road, the Tokaido, the Great Eastern Sea Road, that Hakuin's family had an inn also along that road. So this is a very important route because during a particular period of Japanese history, the daimyo, the rulers of the, well, you could probably call it states if you wanted to make an analogy to the United States, the different regions, the different areas of Japan were called upon to go to Tokyo to be present for the Shogun, I think it was. And this was mandatory twice a year. And so they traveled that road back and forth, and usually with great entourages, with jugglers and clowns and all kinds of people in these long parades. And the expenditures were massive, and that was calculated to keep these minor lords from creating a rebellion against the government. Sahichi said to him, "I've been watching you for a long time. I can see that you're not a petty man. You're even-tempered, you avoid arguments, and you're free of vices. And in fact, you've got all the makings of a monk. Why not shave your head and lead a monk's life, free of ties?" The man grew very happy when he heard this, and on the spot he shaved his hair, laughing, and said, "Ah, what a relief. I've been rid of the grease." This is a metaphor, it says. The expression refers to a plate of greased hair, and here signifies relief from the life as well. The innkeeper laughed with him and replied, "Since I'm the one who persuaded you, I'll give you the name you'll go by as a monk." And he called him Kashiku. Now, it turns out that Kashiku is a formula similar to "yours sincerely," which is used by women at the close of letters. It's an interesting Buddhist name, Kashiku, "yours sincerely." Well, Shido Bunan's name was literally, "the great way is not difficult." Kashiku stayed on for several months more in Sahichi's inn and then decided to set out as a wandering monk. He went to Naniwa, which was Osaka nowadays, singing kyoka on his way, plucking stringed instruments and begging rice from door to door. Whenever he returned to Sahichi's inn, he need not have begged, as his many friends were willing to support him. But Kashiku, who hated flattery and fake praise, refused all invitations to dine. When invited to a meal, he would answer, "I desire nothing but the view of Mount Fuji," and would turn his back and go. One day, his corpse was found in the snow outside a temple gate. He was dressed in beggar's clothing and wrapped in a straw gown. Beside his head lay a scrap of paper which read, "Mount Fuji's melting snow is the ink with which I sign my life's scrolls. Yours sincerely." And this one is by Ungo Kiyo, who died on the 8th day of the 8th month in 1659 at the age of 77. His poem, "I came into the world after Buddha. I leave the world before Miroku." Miroku is the future Buddha. "Between the Buddha, the beginning, and the Buddha, the end, I'm not born, I do not die. I came into the world after Buddha, I leave the world before Miroku. Between the Buddha at the beginning and the Buddha at the end, I am not born, I do not die. I am not born, I do not die." And the whole story of this: on the first day of the 8th month of 1659, Ungo shut himself up in his room and prepared for the end. And on the 8th day, he emerged. On the first day of the 8th month, he went into his room. On the 8th day, he came out and gave a sealed envelope to the monk who attended him. He then called his pupils together and preached to them on one final time. In the middle of his sermon, exactly at noon, he died. When his pupils opened the envelope, they found his last words: "I came into the world after Buddha, I leave the world before Miroku. Between the Buddha of the beginning and the Buddha of the end, I'm not born, I do not die." And then, in contrast to that one, Kisei, who was a haiku poet. Since I was born, I have to die. And so. Zoso Royo died on the fifth day of the sixth month in 1276 at the age of 84. I pondered the Buddha's teaching a full 84 years. The gates are all now locked about me. No one was ever here. Who then is he about to die? And why lament for nothing? Farewell. The night is clear. The moon shines calmly. The wind in the pines is like a lyre's song. With no eye and no other, who hears the sound? I pondered Buddha's teaching a full 84 years. The gates are all now locked about me. No one was ever here. Who then is he about to die? Who then is he about to die? Who then is he or she sitting on the cushion right now? Search deeply, so that when you die, you won't die. I pondered Buddha's teaching a full 84 years. The gates are all now locked about me. No one was ever here. Who then is he about to die? And why lament for nothing? Farewell. The night is clear. The moon shines calmly. The wind in the pines is like the lyre's song. With no eye and no other, who hears the sound? And this is Hakusai, who died on the second day of the ninth month in 1792 at the age of 74. Farewell, and although there be no budding in the spring, no autumn withering, all is well. Farewell, although there be no budding in the spring, nor withering in autumn, all is well. Yesterday's Teisho was titled, Every Day's a Good Day. Even when we're faced with something as dire as open heart surgery or dying from cancer or any of the other multiple challenges people can have in their lives, who is it that is challenged? Who is it that's dying? Who is it that's having open heart surgery? Who is it? This is Jowa, another poet, died on the second day of the second month in 1785 at the age of 71. Second month, I wear a new bamboo hat and go home. Second month, I wear a new bamboo hat and go home. We talk about going to our true home. Hakuin, as I said earlier, spoke of in coming and going, we never leave home. What is this home? It's all-embracing, profoundly peaceful, profoundly present, home, which we never leave even when things seem chaotic. As we extend the out-breath in our practice and search, we come closer to realizing that home. And now we have 5 more days of Sesshin in which to plunge deep. No responsibilities beyond the basic eating and sleeping, preparing food and cleaning. We don't have to go to our work. We have the incredible gift and the incredible liberty to have the time to sit in the Zendo and explore, to search out these answers that have been brought up to us this afternoon. Who are we? How is it that these Zen masters can write that no one's born and no one dies? I came to practice a long time ago at this point because I read a book written by Kapla Roshi. It was his second book, called The Wheel of Death. It was a very thin little book with only 4 chapters, Death, Dying, Karma, and Rebirth. And at the time I was at the bottom and I wanted to die, but I was afraid. And I was in anguish. In addition, my life had fallen into shards around my feet. And so I picked up the book. Somebody loaned it to me at that incredible moment, and I read it cover to cover in one reading. And I was so struck by the ease and the lack of concern and the lack of fear expressed by the Zen masters whose stories were related in that book. And I wondered, what do they know that I don't? And the next morning, which happened to be January 1st, 1974, I sat down and crossed my legs for the first time. It was not easy. It was not easy for a very long time. But since I knew there was no alternative, if I wanted to live a life free, totally free of anguish, that I better walk through that darkness and re-enter the pain and suffering that I was trying to keep out of reach, allow myself to experience it fully, and search deeply within it. Who is it that's suffering? Who is it that is suffering? Who is it that's afraid? Who is it that wants things? Who is it that doesn't want things? Who is it? Search deeply so that you can realize your birthright and become truly free, so that nothing will be too much for you. I thank you for listening, and we'll stop now and recite the 4 vows. Shujo muhen se gando bono mujin se gando.
Nandan Homun Muryo Segan Gaku Butsudo Mujo Segan Yoshujo Muhen Segan Do Bono Mujin Segan Dan Homun Muryo Segan Gaku Butsudo Mujo Segan Jo Shujo Muhen Segan Do Bono Mujin Segan Dan Homun Muryo Segan Gaku Butsudo Mujo Segan Jo.
Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to liberate them. Desires are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. The dharmas are boundless. I vow to master them. The way of liberation is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.